This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Wednesday, 15th of September, 2021, and another week session in the U.S. And I just want to point out, you know, this is getting a bit ad nauseum looking at those past sell-offs in the previous months that we've talked about. Last 4 months in a row around this Friday's options expiry. Let's also, of course, underline that it is the so-called quadruple witching this week, where we have futures and single stocks options also expiring. Just want to note that all of the previous 4 months, those sell-offs are really sort of short, sharp affairs, maximum of 4 days from the day that posted the high. And we're something like 6 or 7 days already now, a couple of days ahead of that Friday. So a bit more of a grinding affair. And I guess the most interesting thing to pull specifically out of yesterday's session was that U.S. CPI print coming in by some of the metrics. I got some more information where, you know, it doesn't agree with necessarily with the headlines that we saw yesterday. But that 0.1% at the core month on month, grabbing, I think, headlines and seeing U.S. Treasuries rallying. So that keeps the Fed at bay. But this did not support the market, Peter. And you were pointing out that the normally interest rate sensitive NASDAQ not doing much on the back of that. So it just looks like sentiment is pretty feeble here, I guess, is the takeaway.
Yeah, because we have seen so many times before that, at least this year, that you know the NASDAQ is very sensitive to what the US 10-year yield is doing. And that dip yesterday, as you could argue, you know, the headline, and that was the initial takeaway, that this was a sort of a victory for the transitory team, as has been called now in on FinTwit. But as we also pointed out in our internal calls, Jacobson said, I mean, there was still plenty of evidence in the inflation report, but also anecdotal evidence and other data points. Ola and I wrote about the energy markets. We'll talk about that later in the podcast in Europe. There are so many evidence that you know, you could say that this is not transitory and something is definitely brewing in the world. And there, I mean, this podcast is not long enough to go through all the various things that are happening and that could be supportive of inflation. But coming back, yeah, we didn't see the bounce in the NASDAQ. And I think it looks rather weak. And I think the big story that is shaping up, of course, is China. So you have on slide three here, you have the Hang Seng futures dipping pretty substantially in today's trading session. We're getting close to some very key support levels, as you can see here. It's quite unusual. I mean, the most equity markets around the world, we are at new all-time highs. If you look at China, it's a very different story. They came out blistering from the pandemic. They got it under control very fast, and then they had a very good rally in the latter part of 2020 and the early parts of this year. And then ever since it has slowed down. They're dealing with, you know, leverage in their real estate system or industry. They're trying to curb that. They have the technology clamped down. Then they had another wave of COVID-19 that they had to deal with that caused some disturbance in August. We saw that in the retail sales numbers, 2.5% growth versus 7% expected. You have had construction spending in China for the first 8 months down combined. And then you have the news out today that Evergrande, the world's largest real estate developer, will not pay interest, which is due on the 20th of September. So banks in China have been instructed to be ready for that. And the restructuring team has already been set in place. So we're sort of moving into a new phase here on Evergrande. And you had a spokesperson from the National Bureau of Statistics in China saying that other real estate developers are feeling a little bit of stress here, so they're upping up the monitoring of the situation, so to speak. So it's a very dynamic situation. We will, of course, you know, comment on what's happening from time to time, but this might still take away, maybe John, you have a different opinion, but my takeaway is still that this is for the most part a domestic issue for China and won't have any significant spillover effects, at least in the short term and via the financial markets to the rest of the world. But maybe you have a different opinion.
Well, you know, there's plenty of argument that China has been quite a leader of global growth throughout the years, and especially since the 2000s, early 2000s, and its response to the global financial crisis with massive stimulus. So And that real estate focus, I think you can just say that, you know, that whole crazy growth phase, at least, is done in China. And this focus on equality, only one home per family-ish, no, you know, investing in second homes, et cetera, is going to be looked down upon. I think it really is important for the potential growth level globally in coming years. I want to circle back though a little bit to that US CPI release just to round out that story. We did see the weaker than expected core number month on month at 0.1%. The, you know, score chalk one up for team transitory, if you will. But there's a great John Authors column, always a thoughtful column from him today in Bloomberg. You can see it on Bloomberg.com. And I pulled the chart from that article, I put it on slide four, where he talks about, you know, one of these pieces of evidence that we're seeing inflation still a concern, even in this August data cycle. If you look at something like the Cleveland Fed's CPI measures. So here we have in blue the sort of median CPI. That's just taking all the different little buckets and whatever the median data point is, showing that it's, you know, it's not anywhere high relative to the recent past. But that so-called trimmed mean, where they just toss out the craziest outliers in either direction, actually posting the highest level since the 2008 cycle. So there's lots of ways you can skin this particular cat, inflation cat. Regardless, the overall reaction was we did see U.S. yields coming in lower. And as we mentioned, that the fact that that didn't give a boost to risk sentiment is quite interesting. I'll talk about the FX reaction in a moment, but I want to get over to you, Ole, in terms of the precious metals and commodities complex in reaction to yesterday's data and what's going on in China. I guess that eventually might have some kind of impact on crude oil.
Yeah, well, let's take the precious metals first, because that's a very short story, because nothing's really going on. Gold is really stuck in mid-range right now, just above 1800 this morning. We are stuck here, as you see on the chart on slide 9. With support at 1780, that key resistance level 1835. Something is happening in the smaller metals. We saw yesterday platinum, that's on the right-hand side here, crash below 950. Its discount to gold has now surged to around $870. It is weakness coming through. We talked about that right last week. From semiconductor industry, car manufacturers slowing production, therefore less demand for platinum. Palladium is also in the crosshairs of this weakness. And at the same time, over in the land of silver, we're seeing silver also underperforming gold. So as long as these developments are unfolding, there's absolutely no reason to be too optimistic on the metal. So sitting on the fence there for now. But turning to the oil market and the energy space in general, we did highlight yesterday the continued surge in European gas, power and coal prices. That looks set to potentially continue as long as we still see inventories not building as much as they should this time of year. But inventories are also falling in the US, and that's the aftermath of Hurricane Ida a couple of weeks ago. And we saw API yesterday come out with their take on stock levels. And you can see that here on slide 8, the small inserts, basically seeing a reduction in stocks across the board, both in oil and in fuel, and that's providing some additional support to the market. Then we also yesterday had a news that China announced another batch of selling of crude oil. I believe it was 7.4 million barrels on September 24th, considered by the markets being small change, considering that we lost more than 30 million barrels from the US outages during the past couple of weeks. So not really having much in terms of a negative impact. So the market will focus on today's inventory report from the US and just basically see how much we see stock levels continue to fall from this very, very prolonged disruption they've seen. And on the chart, 73.70, also the downtrend from the recent highs, basically holding above that level, then the 76 is in the crosshairs of the technical traders.
Yeah, and I would encourage folks to have a re-listen to yesterday's podcast, your portion there on both the natural gas situation and uranium, what's going on there, that crazy short squeeze we've seen in uranium and interest in the sector from the so-called Reddit army. By the way, I can't help but think, and call me a conspiracy theorist, but we have this Nord Stream 2 pipeline in Germany. This is a political issue as well, domestically in Germany. And we have, no secret, an election coming up in 11 days. I wonder, there's been talks as well that Russian supplies otherwise in their natural gas system have been somewhat constricted of late, that they're applying maximum pressure to ensure the Greens see as poor a result as possible in this election. Would not be surprised to see suddenly lots of gas flowing through that pipeline sometime after election day. So that has to be certainly the hope for us, hoping that we don't get a crazy gas spike in prices this winter.
That is a speculation, and one that has been been mentioned for quite a while, and it is obviously
not my words. It's a narrative. No, absolutely. It's a narrative, and it's a narrative I have some sympathy with. Yeah. But you know, to what degree it's intentional or due to a whole complex of factors, of course.
But we also just have to remember that it has been a troubled year for Russia as well in terms of outages. So they are actually also right now having to fill up their own reserves, because obviously the last thing they want to experience is running out of reserves themselves this winter. So there's basically a fierce competition for gas right now. So we'll see how that picture develops next week.
All right, good stuff. Now let's. I just want to recap the FX reaction to yesterday's U.S. data and what we were describing as relatively weak risk sentiment, because we saw a bit more volatility in the FX space. And I think the pattern was pretty consistent across a number of themes and pairs, a lot of which aligned along this sort of risk on, risk off fault line. So if you look at something like the Japanese yen, no huge surprise. We see a stiffer, stronger Japanese yen on the back of U.S. yields falling recently. And even into this morning, we saw a hotter than expected U.K. CPI print. Got zero traction on that in terms of sterling. And so interesting to see something like sterling yen reversing viciously back lower despite an attempted upside break. I have a slide, a chart on slide 5, and you can see there's a lot of stuff in play here. We have a huge sort of head and shoulders style formation, a little bit poorly defined exactly where that neckline is, but you get the general gist here, 149, 149.50, the latter of which is towards the 200-day moving average, but also the fact that we failed to break the price highs of the last, let's call it a month, and as well, this so-called Ichimoku cloud level that was once again rejected an attempt at the upside break there. So sets up, I think, a bearish look here until proven otherwise with yesterday's candlestick. And then sort of underlining this theme, of course, we saw the dollar coming in stronger despite the lower U.S. yields. That reflects a weak risk sentiment. But something like the Swedish krona yesterday as well. Swedish krona, notoriously one of the most risk-sensitive currencies out there. We saw a much hotter than expected CPI print. Some the highest 2-year rates for the cycle in Sweden, as there was a bit of a response in terms of interest rates expectations out the curve. Euro stocky broke below the local lows there, as you can see on slide 6, and below the 200-day moving average, a really critical level there. And yet, by the end of the day, had erased all of this on a reversal, I think, across the space in terms of risk appetite. So we're seeing this to some degree in China exposed currencies, out in Asia, Aussie and Kiwi, et cetera. So I think a very interesting pivot we saw in FX as well as just about everywhere else yesterday. All right, Peter, you've got an individual equity story. It's a very, very quiet earnings week, but Inditex, you're pointing out on slide 7. Take us through what your focus is there.
Yeah, before I talk about Inditex, I just noticed in the slide deck that for some odd reason, I did put in the slides on the energy stories that Ole and I wrote about yesterday. You talked briefly about it with the electricity price and gas prices rising in Europe. You can find it on analysis.sax. So I basically just lay out the points that certain industries are being hit harder than others. So lime, clay, building materials, steel, etc. is the ones that are hitting the hardest from the rise in electricity prices and energy prices in general. And on the country level, you have Southern Europe and Eastern Europe, which is running the highest electricity bills in percentage of median income for families. So these countries are most vulnerable to social unrest. We have to remember that, you know, the Yellow West was the movement in France 3 years ago was protest movement against rising fuel prices, and I wonder how much more the Europeans can take with these elevated electricity prices. We've seen several governments step in, UK, Spain, etc., stepping in with subsidies. Also, Greece, I think, yesterday as well. And my point is that European profit margins have bounced back pretty rapidly from the pandemic to around 8%. So we're now 2 percentage points above the average over the past 2 decades. And that means that just naturally you have mean reversion effects kicking in, trying to pull that profit margin down. And with the rising commodity prices almost hitting a new all-time high for the Bloomberg's commodity spot index and the current energy situation in Europe and the coming winter, then you could begin to become a little bit nervous over profit margins and what it will do to earnings growth. Sorry for the long spiel. I just thought it's an important topic to actually to discuss and have in on mind. In terms of Inditex, very shortly, there's not much to say except that they're coming out of the abyss. They are hitting the estimates both on the top line and the operating income side. Sales up 49% compared to the first half of last fiscal year. They're not following the calendar year. So these the first 6 months of this current fiscal year ended in late July. They are seeing a steady improvement in their online sales, not as high as the top line growth, which I think is negative. But on the positive side, their increased mix towards online sales is improving their gross margin above estimates. And I think that will be the kicker that could send the share price higher today.
All right. And actually, while still on equities, there were a couple of points I wanted to point out, just because I think the technical situation is getting so interesting with the S&P 500 index. If you notice on slide, back on slide two, those, if you connect the sort of the trend lines at each point since that May to June dip, the next dip did not quite hit the trend line and actually rallied just ahead of hitting it. And you saw that in August as well. And you can see that we're basically at near that trend line for the second time here that started back in July. So I can't emphasize enough where, you know, we're a little bit concerned here. And if there is the risk of one of these, you know, gamma exposure, whatever you want to call it, a derivatives exposure, a blowouts, it could be a risk into the Friday expiry and afterwards if the selling does continue to deepen from here. We're not calling for a crash. It just means that the risk of volatility picking up sort of stays high. Peter, I know we're close to, or we've been close to those key sort of trigger levels you've talked about in the VIX. Are we not, what is it, 22 or 23 historically you were looking at as a key level?
Yeah, 22 seems to be where there is an equilibrium in the volatility market.
All right, and then finally, just on the weekly, then this is sort of a reminder on the theme we mentioned a couple times in past weeks, this lack of a 5% correction. You can kind of see it just visually on the slide 11 weekly chart on the S&P 500. Just stunning how long we've been going without any sizable correction. We have some fairly divergent momentum there. We may be picking up on the downside momentum as well. So just wanted to point that out. And then on the calendar for today, plenty of points to look at. Slide 10, I don't want to dwell on any of these. I think one of the more interesting ones for today is the Canadian CPI. And given that we ignored a super hot Swedish print yesterday and we ignored a relatively hot UK print today, I wonder if the Canadian dollar could be under pressure regardless of whatever the CPI says today, especially if oil prices don't do what Ola thinks and they actually head a bit lower. But Dollar Canada very much in a limbo range here between around 127.75 and 125, waiting for next steps and pretty much correlated with risk sentiment as well when it starts to heat up. And then you can see the rest of the week, the retail sales out tomorrow out of the US and the Michigan sentiment on Friday. And then a couple of data points out of the Antipodes tonight, the New Zealand Q2 GDP and the Australian RBA bulletin, as well as the latest Australian jobs report. I can't imagine that's terribly interesting when everybody's, not everybody, but in significant parts of Australia are in lockdown. That's it for today. Stay careful out there, and we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.